Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to today's afternoon satsang. And we shall be continuing on where we had left off from several fortnights, that is delving into the Navavidha Bhakti Marga, the ninefold path of devotion, or the nine modes of devotion, nine modes of worship, however we may call it. And in this journey, we have covered the Shravanam, the Kirtanam, the Vishnu Smaranam, and today we come to the fourth mode, the fourth path, or the fourth variety, which is Padasevanam. Before we begin that, I would like to offer our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan, and it becomes more relevant in a sense today, I feel, because when we offer salutations at the lotus feet of the Lord, that is Padasevanam, and I feel since today's theme is Padasevanam, we offer a little bit special prostrations at his lotus feet. With that, I welcome Prem, who is always along with me in today's satsang. Sairam, Prem, and I am really looking forward to this discussion on Padasevanam.
Definitely, and a good reason why we look forward to it is, I think the past couple of occasions we have surprised ourselves, because I think, you know, that is probably the beauty of Swami's message. One thing which I always think when I'm contemplating on Swami's message, you know, you take any discourse of Swami, and there is so much of variety in what Swami says, from Advaita to Bhakti to Seva to all of that. And sometimes Swami speaks about very, very abstract things, and then there is so much of practical advice in it. Many a times we find it very disjointed, you know. This is for this, probably we might think that this is for people with this bent of mind. This is for people who follow this particular path. But I think the day when we are able to see Swami's message in its entirety, we'll see that everything is in its place and everything is relevant to each one of us. We won't say that this is not for me.
Exactly, and I think that has been happening to each one of us in our own way, in our lives, where we suddenly discover how something we thought as esoteric is very practical, and something that we thought is very mundane and practical is actually very esoteric and very lofty, and then we realize that there's no difference. It is just different ways of stating the same truth, because that also, you know, I feel Swami has stated in his discourse that there is only the same truth and there is nothing else to be spoken other than that truth. Just the way the truth is spoken about, the way you elaborate on it may be different based on our different aptitudes and attitudes, but the truth is just the same. With that background, you know, when we go to Pada Puja, what immediately springs to mind, not Pada Puja, Pada Seva. See, that itself shows, when you say Pada Seva, what springs to mind is Pada Puja. You know, my mind races back to those glorious days in the early 1950s, 1940s, 1960s, when Swami would permit the devotees to perform what is known as Pada Puja. It would be an elaborate ritual, and just like we fix an appointment with the priest in the temple for a particular puja, you know, which takes a ritual which takes time, so too would devotees seek an appointment from Swami, and Swami would give them a time, something like 9:30 in the morning or 11 in the morning or 3:30 in the afternoon, and they would arrive with their entire family and one little kit, if I can call it so, and they would seat Swami on the chair, and Swami would sit very silently, and, you know, well-behaved God, he would sit there, and then they would start their worship, where they take out a white handkerchief, spread it, and make Swami place his feet on them. And then, and I think before spreading the white handkerchief, they would place his feet in a plate. And the affluent devotees would get a silver plate. The not so affluent ones would get possibly a copper plate or whatever. A plate in which Swami's feet would be placed. Then they would wash it with water and, you know, adorn it with kumkum, haldi, chandan and akshatas, and do the ashtotram, chant out different names of the Lord and worship the feet, literally worship the feet, the way we worship the idol of Lord Ganesha on Ganesh Chaturthi or the idol of Krishna on Krishna Janmashtami. That way they would worship the feet, and it's amazing how Swami would lovingly and sweetly sit for the entire duration of 45 minutes or an hour, at the end of which I remember reading that the devotees would pick up those gentle, tender feet. Ah, what beauty, what joy it must have been, and smear sandalwood paste on Swami's soul.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would spread a white cloth and make Swami place his feet on the white cloth so that, you know, the footprints get imprinted on that white cloth forever. And that is something that many devotees even to this day treasure. They have this cloth on which there are Swami's footprints in chandan or haldi maybe or kumkum maybe, depending on what they applied to his feet. Ah, blessed are those times, and you really envy those devotees who had that beautiful opportunity of doing Pada Puja, Pada Seva to Swami himself.
And probably a clarification here. Some people might say, what is the difference between Seva and Puja? The word Seva is actually used even for Puja, right? Even if you go to Tirupati and all that, all the different worships are called Sevas actually. They're called, you know, Suprabhatam Seva or Brahmamurtam Seva. The word Seva is also used for Puja, and at the same time, the word Seva is also referred to as, you know, offering service to the feet, which means like pressing the feet of the Lord. That's why Swami would very often say that the best example for this path is Mother Lakshmi, because she is the one who is eternally at the feet of the Lord doing Pada Seva. And that is also one more opportunity. Of course, the opportunity to do Pada Seva to Swami is an entirely different theme altogether, and how people have yearned for it, and how we've, you know, especially when you go to the interview or when you get a chance, we've seen it in Trai Vrindavan, the chance to press Swami's feet. And, you know, the beauty with the description which you gave about, you know, Swami allowing them to do such an elaborate worship is the very thing which Swami is usually done. And even in this concept of Pada Seva, we'll see how Swami has expanded our idea of what is Pada Seva. Because what Swami usually does is he fits into the traditional belief which you come to Swami with. You feel that I have to worship Swami like this. You feel that I have to traditionally worship Swami. I have to chant all these things and worship Swami. He kind of, you know, comes and fits into that religious belief of yours, and then slowly expands your understanding of that concept. Swami has done that for everything, and we'll see that, you know, every discourse of Swami does that. You know, he will talk of some particular aspect of spirituality which we can relate to, and then slowly expand our idea of what it really is.
You know, when you were saying about how in Trai Vrindavan he would give us the opportunity to press his feet, I remember on one occasion I got this opportunity. You see, even that whole the whole sequence of events in those days, how wonderfully etched there in the memory. You are also a Vrindavan student, I'm sure you remember how we would struggle and strive to get into a line that will get token number one to go for darshan. And even as we get into that line, the normal expectation of any devotee would be that a student who has got token number one will rush to sit right in front of Bhagwan's chair in Sai Ramesh Hall, because that is why you're struggling to get token number one, right? So that you can sit right in front of the Lord for the bhajan session in the evening. But any new devotee would see a very surprising sight. He would see that the student who is right in the front of the line rushes to the bang opposite end instead of sitting right in front of Swami. He would sit farthest from Swami on many occasions. From that place, you would not be able to see Swami, because if you remember, there are those two pillars on either side of Swami's chair. That pillar will be blocking the view of Bhagwan on the chair.
Right.
I'm sure anybody would have felt it strange, but I'm sure you also know the reason why we would do that.
Exactly. I think, you know, the stage where what is greater than even seeing Swami properly or having Swami darshan properly was this opportunity to, you know, go in front in Trai Vrindavan, get those first few seats next to Swami's jhula, and have this opportunity to press Swami's feet. And I think in that is the, you know, is the clue where we speak about these nine paths as progressively going higher in devotion. If we talk of that, we spoke about, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Vishnu Smaranam. All three of this probably fall into one category where the devotee is in that introductory phase. Like, you know, I remember myself in those first few months in Vrindavan, I couldn't imagine myself probably touching Swami's feet or being spoken to by Swami or speaking to Swami directly. You know, for me, Swami was like, he's God. You know, I'm happy to even listen about him. I'm happy to even talk about him. I'm happy just seeing him.
thinking about
you know, you build a wall around yourself, saying that I don't deserve more than this. I think that Shravanam, Kirtanam and Vishnu Smaranam come in that category, where you're overawed by God and, you know, you're happy to just be around Him. But Padasevanam is that one step where you go higher, where you, you know, yearn even for that physical touch. I think with Swami, I think we all felt that.
And that is precisely the reason why the boy would sit farthest away, because it is from there that the lines would go for a tri-session. After the bhajan gets over, Swami would receive aarti and go back to his residence in Tri Vrindavan. And then it was not a confirmed thing, but Swami might call for a tri-session or might not call. And if he calls, then the lines that will leave from Ramesh Hall to Tri Vrindavan would be from that end which is farthest from Swami's chair.
Right.
And therefore, people are, you know, the students were ready to take a chance of sitting right in the front in Tri Vrindavan, because it was not a confirmed thing. Every day there would be no tri session. On many days there would be no tri session, and the boy sitting right in that corner, I think, would be the most disappointed, because he has got the opportunity to be the engine of the line going first. He has given up the opportunity to sit right bang opposite to Swami during bhajans, and he has sat in one corner where he might not even be able to see Swami clearly, all with that hope that there is a tri session and he can sit right in the front. And when that is dashed, he's naturally disappointed. But it just goes to show that the pining and the intensity to be, to touch Swami's feet and be close to his feet is so strong, it definitely feels superior to Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, because you're giving up precisely those in order to get Padasevanam. You're giving up Shravanam, Kirtanam and Vishnu Smaranam. You're giving up Darshanam, you're giving up all those just for the sake of Padasevanam. And as I said, I remember on one occasion when I got this opportunity to sit right in front, Swami came and everybody was pressing Swami's feet. So I also, you know, in the beginning, my thought was that when you press Swami's feet, you press the the foot part of the feet,
right,
of the leg, you know, the foot. And so there were two boys already pressing that, and then I saw one boy with one of his hands. He was massaging Swami's calf, right calf. I said, wow, this is great. So I began to massage Swami's left calf muscle. And I saw that Swami did not say anything. So it was thrilling, and it felt more intimate for me. And I began to press his right calf, and with both my hands. I gave up the feet actually and began to press the calf. Why I'm saying this is because, you know, we often think that it's a great opportunity to press Swami's feet, and blessed are those who got the opportunity. Yes, it is. It's a blessing to do it, but it's not easy, Prem, because I'm sure you also know this. But even as I was pressing, you know, after about 10-15 minutes of pressing, yes, your hand is unable to sustain that pressure. So I just, you know, began to, I'm just in contact, and the pressure reduced.
Mm-hmm.
Swami looked at us and he said, no, press harder. He showed with his hands, and he also turned his hands in opposite direction, saying that the way you would wring a cloth dry, wring my muscles like that, you know. And so that gave us energy and enthusiasm, and again we began to. But after 5-10 minutes, your forearms start aching. Trust me, they start aching so much, and Swami just looks and asks, what happened? At that point in time, Prem, can you believe it? I really felt if somebody could take over from me for 15-20 minutes, after that I would like to take over again. I don't think anybody will ever think that when you get this opportunity to do Pada Seva to Swami, you will want to take a break from doing it. But I just felt later on in my life, looking back at this episode, I just felt that just like physical Pada Seva is definitely a blessing, but it's not something that everybody can do. You need a lot of training. I need to have strong forearm muscles. I need to have muscles which are used to working non-stop continuously for 1 hour so that they don't tire out pressing the Lord's feet. It's not simple thing that you press his feet. I felt that's a metaphor for true Padasevanam in our life also. If we really want to serve the feet of the Lord, we need great strength, we need great endurance, and for that we need a lot of training, because there it is 1 hour. Here we are talking about a lifetime. So it requires us to do a lot of, you know, possibly gymming, spiritual gymming and building up our spiritual muscles so that we are able to do Path Seva to our Lord throughout the life.
And in a way, if you look at it, you know, Path Sevanam, forget the ultimate sense of it or forget the most pure form of it. It comes from the idea that I am getting some opportunity. You know, at least when it came to Swami, that's what it is.
Hmm.
You know, I am seeing Swami, that's so special. But I want to touch Swami, you know, I want to have that sparshan. It is almost like we going and grabbing an opportunity. And that's why we ran, and that's why we, you know, that became prime real estate just around Swami. It's because we were grabbing an opportunity. So still in that relationship, we are the center of the relationship. You know, I am getting something from there. And that is why probably when that physical pain came, you know, so easily you give up that, because still you're the center, and when you are getting hurt, when you are feeling uncomfortable, then, you know, that becomes priority. In the relationship, you know, still the weightage is still on yourself. Because I remember so many of these old students narrating how it was so difficult, because, you know, when you just look at Swami's lifestyle, almost on his feet the entire day, walking around, especially, you know, in those days when there was sand, I think it must have been a little more difficult walking around. You know, we've seen it. You walk in the beach, it's actually more difficult when you walk. Of course, it's flattened sand, but still it's not like concrete. And somebody who spends 3 to 4 hours a day walking around like that, and Swami would literally want that kind of massage. You know, Swami would say, press harder. And there was this student who was narrating, you know, how it happened the first time when he had the opportunity. And there were these 3-4 boys around Swami who were always in Swami's room. And when Swami went and sat, he was thinking that he'll have to have a dash and race with the others to go and sit next to Swami's feet. And he found that the other 3 people very, you know, eagerly offered him the chance. He said, yeah, you go and sit in front. So he was very happy. He went and sat there. He thought probably, you know, they're being very kind. But that's when he realized after a day or two, it's so tiring. He said, your forearms will be burning. And, you know, that is where you start thinking that, is this all Pada Sevanam is about? You know, when you picture that Mother Lakshmi sitting at the feet of Lord Vishnu and pressing his feet, is it just that physically pressing the Lord's feet? Is it physically just sitting there and offering that seva to Swami? And I think that's when you will start contemplating on whether, is this all I need from God?
You know, there are several stories also in our, not stories actually, this is not a story, these are real life happenings in our history that really makes us ponder about the same. Is Pada Sevanam just about sitting and pressing the Lord's feet? I am reminded of the story of Pundalika, the great devotee of Panduranga. It is said that, you know, if you look at any Panduranga idol,
mm-hmm.
Panduranga and Vithala Rakumai, you see them standing on a brick with their hands in a posture of waiting, you know, the hands on their hips. That is the famous pose of Vithoba and Rakumai. That very pose has come into being because of Pundalika. It is said that Pundalika was someone who served his parents a lot. And one day, the Lord was so touched because, you know, Matur Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava, your parents revere your mother as God, your father as God. So touched with this act of Pundalika, it is said that Lord Panduranga, Vithala, comes to his home and he calls out to Pundalika, says, I have come, Pundalika. Pundalika says, I'm sorry, you will have to wait because I'm pressing the feet of my mother and my father. There, I'm putting them to sleep, I'm pressing their feet, and it is said that Pundalika throws a brick at the Lord, not actually at him, but near the Lord, and he says, please wait on that, please wait there, I'll be coming. And it said that Lord stands on the brick, and that's why even to this day, Vithala and Rakumai are shown standing on the brick waiting. It shows, so if pressing the Lord's feet was the ultimate, how can pressing your parents' feet make the Lord also wait to receive the same from you? It shows that pressing the Lord's feet transcends. And that is why in our Bharatiya culture, it is considered as a blessing to be able to touch the feet of not only your parents, even of elders. You know, you were saying about how Swami would walk on the sands throughout and therefore his feet would ache. I remember reading where Swami himself is saying that the feet carry the entire body around everywhere, and this body is the temple of God. So the feet are performing a great role, and therefore in order to bow to the temple of the Lord, it is best that you touch and massage the feet. And as I said, this was not restricted only to the Lord, to all your elders. And you know, when I had been to the state of Orissa, I was amazed at how vibrant this culture of falling at the other's feet is in this apparently economically backward state. Not apparently, it's economically backward, but people consider it as a poor state. But I felt it is so rich with the Indian culture and tradition, because nobody feels any kind of inhibition while falling at the other's feet and recognizing, you know, this divine act that is performed by the feet in carrying the temple of God around. So I feel even in a physical sense, restricting Padasevanam to just pressing the feet of the Lord alone is not right, because it encompasses far more than that.
Right. In fact, one thing which Swami would often say is, you know, especially to the elders, it often happens when you've lived many years with Swami, you are well known as somebody who has spent so many years and very close to Swami. You know, devotees will start coming and falling at your feet, thinking that, you know, offering pranams to your feet is like offering it to Swami's feet.
Mm.
And Swami would in fact very strictly tell those people not to do that, not to allow people to do that, because it actually results in accumulating sometimes a lot of negativity. Because that's what really happens when you touch the feet of some elder. You are drawing positivity from them. At the same time, you are actually discarding some negativity. And Swami would say that not everybody will have that capacity. In fact, I remember one of my classmates was saying that there was this Swamiji who would, you know, have thousands of people visit him, and he would give, very, very pious man, he would give pravachan and all that. And at the end of it, people would come and take his Pad Namaskar. And they would have a cycle where I think after one and a half hours or something like that, this person would have to retire, and he would say, no, now I'm very tired because of, you know, people taking Pad Namaskar. So they would have a time, 1.5 hours or something. More than that, he can't bear people taking Pad Namaskar.
Hmm.
You know, that's what happens when you actually transfer. In fact, another thing which one of the elders was saying, why this tradition of touching people's feet? They were saying that, you know, you don't touch everybody's feet. You're supposed to touch the feet of people who, at least in your idea, are people who have done a lot of good karma. So this idea of touching people's feet is actually you saluting good karma, and this feet have borne the body which has performed all this karma. So you're actually saluting that feet. That's how it is.
Saluting the good karma.
Good karma by saluting the feet.
The feet. Perfectly put. And as you said, therefore, the safest bet would be on the Lord's feet, because right. You're sure that it is only done good karma, and it is definitely much more holier than you in the sense it has realized the Lord's feet, means the Lord has realized the divinity, and therefore falling at the feet of the Lord or a self-realized soul is definitely a very beneficial thing. When you were narrating about Swami warning the devotees, I remember how Swami had sternly reprimanded revered Professor Kasturi.
Right.
Because he told him that, Swami tells him that, you know, people are falling at your feet, right? You're allowing your ego to rise. He says, Swami, I never asked for that, but they just fall. So, I also, you know, when I was reading that, I felt, yeah, that's right, correct? Means, he didn't ask, what do you do if somebody falls at your feet? That's what happens. We fall at some elder's feet. What can that elder do? He or she never asked us to fall, but if we fall, what can he do? The point Swami makes there is so wonderful. Swami says, that I know they fell, but you seem to enjoy that. You seem to enjoy giving that Pad Namaskar to them. You know, so it is good for that person in his humility is falling at your feet and saluting the Swami in you, but you enjoy it when you feel that you are receiving the salutations. Because if you know that it's only Swami who is receiving the salutations and not you, what is the need for that secret enjoyment? That is a very, very subtle point, and I think that is something that we can keep in mind, you know, because a time may come when 40 years down the line, 50 years down the line, people may fall at our feet saying that, you know, you have seen the Lord. Yes, that is good for them, and yes, it is our good karma that we have seen the Lord, but let us remember that they are not saluting this body, they are not saluting us, they are saluting the Lord within us. And unless we have realized our oneness with the Lord, there is no use in, you know, feeling pride or whatever in that. On another line of thought, this Pada Sevanam or Pada Puja or Pada Namaskar, as they call it, touching the feet, it is said, Swami in another discourse has said, that sacred impulses from the Lord's feet flow and cleanse the devotee's mind. It helps in cleansing the devotee's mind. It takes me back to the first prayer that Swami made, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam Dustara Bhavasagara Taranam. In order to get across this ocean of misery and life, O mind, meditate on the feet of the Lord. Because, you know, here it is, Swami says that the mind gets cleansed thanks to the sacred impulses which flow out from the Lord's feet. We have, even there are oral studies that are made. It is said that when you touch the feet of a person who is having a superior aura to you, that aura envelops you and you benefit a little from that aura. And conversely, it means that that person, unless he is a generator of such positivity, begins to lose such aura. Forget touching the feet, Prem. This happens when you, for example, speak to somebody who is depressed or who is very sad.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you encourage them, console them and cheer them up. At the end of it, they go away happy and cheered. But have you noticed that you feel down, low and exhausted and tired, and after that you want to take a break? That's because I feel none of us have completely tapped in the inexhaustible reservoir of energy called divinity, which is within each one of us. And that's why we need some kind of a conduit to experience that divinity that is within ourselves. But only Swami can spend days, weeks, months, years listening only to people's tales of sorrow. That's what I feel Swami used to do. All the letters he receives are all tragedies, because they are all asking for something or complaining about something. Very rarely I think we gave gratitude letters to Swami. Every interview would be same thing. Feeling complaints, health problems, relationship issues, financial problems, business problems. Only that. And yet Swami is the most cheerful one in the entire hall every time. I feel that's because he is himself a generator of that energy. How much ever you take away from that aura will not reduce, because that is the aura of divinity. So, therefore, it is amazing that, as I said, when we fall at some elder's feet, we feel good. But unless that person is a generator of such aura by himself or herself, as you said, like that Swamiji you mentioned, they would have to retire inside to regenerate that energy by their own sadhana or whatever, because that is the amount of loss that happens, and that is definitely a kind of seva they are doing by giving out that energy. But unless they are the Lord, they can't regenerate it themselves.
Right. In fact, now to recollect, I think till Swami's 75th year, Swami was giving Padnamaskar for all the sevadal who are coming, right? And that used to be not less than 1,000 men and 1,000 women. And
exactly.
Swami was doing it every 15 days. I mean, unbelievable it is. Till the 75th year. And of course, if Swami is in Vrindavan, Swami would do it there for the Vrindavan Sevadal. And apart from that, the number of times the students touch Swami's feet and the devotees would touch Swami's feet. Special groups. And innumerable. And the beauty with Swami was, those were the occasions Swami would actually glow a little more. You know, when Swami goes out, I remember as late as 2009, and when the Orissa people came and Swami gave them clothes and keys for their new houses, Swami would be beaming after a session like that, when he would go around and 1,000 people take Padnamaskar and he comes back. Of course, that was a different aspect of Swami, where Swami would be happier when he gives. You know, we would see that when Swami distributes something and comes back, you know that Swami is, you know, twice or thrice as happy as if Swami could ever be more happier than he already is.
Even if it means distribution of Padnamaskar.
Absolutely.
He would come back glowing and happy.
Right.
And yes, so as you said, as you rightly observed, so Swami was a generator himself, and that is why he could do it. And I feel that is the reason why, though yes, it is good to fall at the feet of our parents, definitely, because they definitely have done more good karma than us, in the sense we have got the opportunity to be born to them. Feet of our elders, as you said, whom we recognize as those who have done good. But the safest bet would be the feet of the Lord, because here you get infinite benefit and there's no loss for the person concerned, because you're sure that the Lord is the generator of all the goodness and godliness in the universe, so therefore there can be no loss there. Purnamida purnamada purnamada purnamidam. That's what happens. You take fullness from fullness, the fullness remains full. That's what happens with the Lord. And that is why, you know, Padasevanam is such a beautiful path. It's also a kind of an easy path, because you're not generating stuff, you're actually just taking from the Lord what he has generated and kept. It's just that with humility and reverence, when you bow, it gets conferred upon you and you get exalted. Isn't that the reason why it is said even in the Bible that though he who humbleth himself will be exalted?
Right.
You humbly bow at the feet and you gather everything. In this context, I remember, you know, speaking on the redeeming power of the Lord's feet.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one little story. I had got an opportunity to narrate this story in Bhagwan's presence also. And I remember Swami enjoyed the story, everyone else enjoyed the story, and I feel this is a very, very important story in terms of the message it holds. It's the story of one little fish in an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So the story goes that this fish used to roam about the ocean in great joy and freedom without any worry, and all the other fishes used to live in a fear. What was this fear? Every morning the fisherman would come and cast his net. And the fishes would get caught in the net and they would be stuck. Results in death. So every fish would be fearing that, who knows, today I got saved, tomorrow might be the day when I get stuck. Day after might be the day. Except this little fish that lived with great confidence and didn't have any fear at all. So one day, the other fishes came to this little fish and said, how is it that you're able to live a life without any fear? Don't you get scared that you might get caught in the fisherman's net? The little fish says, I will never get caught in the fisherman's net. Say, how are you so confident? He says, because when the fisherman comes into the ocean to cast his net, I go and swim at the feet of that fisherman there. So he throws the net away from his feet. The net never falls on his feet. And therefore, as long as I'm swimming near his feet, the net will never trap me. And that is the secret of this little fish. And that is a secret that we have to learn in this Bhavasagara, in this ocean of life when we are swimming. The Lord comes and casts this net of Maya. And anybody who is caught in the net of Maya goes to Mrityu, death. If you want Amritam Gamaya, if you want immortality, you have to escape this net of Maya. And the only way to escape this net of Maya is to swim at the feet of the Lord. It lies in Padasevanam. And that is precisely the reason why I feel Swami said, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. Mind, meditate on the feet of the Lord. Because when you meditate on the feet of the Lord, you will escape the net of Maya and you will be able to go towards immortality even though you are living in this Bhavasagara. So that is the redeeming power of the Lord's feet, and therefore Padasevanam is such a beautiful and exalted path.
And as we said, it starts with this desire to save yourself. You know, it starts with this desire to lead yourself to a better life. That's how Padasevanam starts. And as we said, you know, this is also a stage where you probably feel that I can touch the Lord. Because if you ask yourself, you know, why Padasevanam? Why not I touch the hands of the Lord? You know, It's because we always feel that, you know, the feet are the lowliest part of the body. And as a devotee, you feel that even when we address, we say that, Swami, we are like the dust of your feet. This is the stage where you are raising yourself to a little closeness, where you say, Swami, I can touch your feet. You know, I've come to that stage of touching your feet. And for my own redemption, it is not like you need that pressing of your feet, you need that puja to your feet, but it is for my own redemption. That's how it starts, really. But then, as we said, you know, any message of Swami, any discourse of Swami, if you take it and start looking at it deeper and deeper and deeper, the meaning that it will reveal will be so immense. And as we initially said, each one of these paths are progressively higher, but at the same time, each path in itself can contain the entire journey too.
When you made that point about why the feet and not the hand, the analogy that came in my mind was, you see, we all have a water tank on top of our building. And in the building, if you notice, the pressure of the water and the water flow is maximum on the ground floor. It's the least on the topmost floor. I know it because I live on one of the top floors. I live on the 5th floor. And when the tank gets empty, you know, one of the first people to come to know is our house. We lose the water first. And even when the tank is filled, the least pressure and therefore the least amount of water comes from the taps in our home. But go to the ground floor, go to the watchman's house. Oh, wow. It comes gushing forth. So, you know, in a similar way, I'm just tempted to think that even in the Lord, that's what happens. You know, the maximum grace will gush forth at the feet compared to the hand, or compared possibly to the face. That's what I feel. I feel like this because of also another statement that Swami makes. You know, Swami says, while speaking about the meaning of Upanishad, Swami says, Upanishad means, Upa means close, Ni means below, you sit. Swami says, you have to sit close to and below the Guru to receive, because that is where Swami gives the example of a reservoir and water. He says you have to have the reservoir at a higher place, then only water will flow to a lower place. So I feel in that sense, Pada Sevanam is one way of Upanishad itself. Because when we do Pada Sevanam, we are sitting close to the Master, we are also sitting lower at the feet of the Master, and then there can be a flow which redeems us. Therefore, in that sense, you know, Pada Sevanam is literally like living the Upanishad.
And going back to when you look at it, when Swami is physically, relating it to physically Swami being there, you know, as I said, the idea of touching Swami's feet is actually a step closer. But when you look at it, when you see Swami, and even when you come to a state where you want Swami to look at you, you know, that's a little more audacious, you know. From the point of saying that, you know, I'm just coming for Swami's darshan, that's good enough. Hmm. But when you start saying that, hey, today Swami did not look at me, today Swami did not speak to me, it's a little higher expectation. But I've seen some students, I mean, we've all done that. You know, we will sit in front of Swami, in the bhajan hall, Swami will be sitting in the throne. We will not look at Swami, we will only keep looking at Swami's feet. Okay, even if Swami is looking at you, Swami will sometimes steal a glance. If you look up, he will turn away. Okay, so we will keep looking at Swami's feet. So the logic is, we would say that, you know, Swami's feet don't have eyes. So if you look at Swami's feet, you always feel that Swami's feet is looking at you. You know, and I mean, in fact, it's said in the Bhagavatam, right? When Prahlada points out to the pillar and say, Hiranyaka, the Lord is there. Lord Narasimha comes out. It seems it's such a terrorizing form that even the devas and devatas get scared seeing that form of the Lord. So after Hiranyakashipu is like massacred in that manner, all of them come down to pray and, you know, ask him to cool down. They even Mother Lakshmi also comes, you know, to pray and cool to get the Lord to composure. It seems at that time they all turn to Prahlada. The only person who's smiling in that room is Prahlada, who's sitting in with all devotion, he's smiling. So that's when it seems Lord Brahma comes and asks him. He said, how are you alone not scared of this terrifying form?
Mm.
He says, because all of you are looking at the face, I am only looking at the feet. And the feet of the Lord are always so loving. And you know, that is precisely, you know, because when we run with our problems, when we come rushing to Swami with our problems, we know that you can put it at Swami's feet and you always have recourse, you always have solution to it. And that's why, you know, however close a devotee gets, probably the feet are always very, very dear to us.
You know, I'm very, very tempted to just share another personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just how beautiful, it's just a beautiful incident, that's all. Possibly it also speaks about the perfection in the Lord's timing. We often feel that sometimes the Lord is late, sometimes the Lord came a little too late into our life or whatever. The Lord's timing is always perfect. It was my birthday in the year 2008, I think, 2009 maybe. And during that time, there was Saptaham going on in Prashanthi Nilayam, Ramayana Saptaham or Bhagavata Saptaham, I don't remember precisely what.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a day when there was Laksharchana. I remember because I went to the Kulwant Hall with a bowl in hand and I filled up the bowl with Akshata grains from that Laksharchana. And it was my birthday, so I just hoped that Swami would bless me by sprinkling a few Akshata grains on my head. But that day during Darshan, Swami cut through after the ladies' side, didn't come to the gent side for Darshan, went into the interview room. And I therefore went and sought a place in the bhajan hall. Only the alumni would be doing bhajans in the morning, because the students would come only for the evening sessions. So in the morning in the bhajan hall, I sat in the third row or something holding this bowl, hoping that Swami blesses me for my birthday. And Swami came into the bhajan hall after the bhajans had begun. And so therefore, I sat there holding the bowl, and as Swami saw me, he smiled. I felt that Swami is going to bless me. I felt so happy and confident. But as you said, you know, after that Swami never looked at me, and the more I looked at Swami's face, it was very saddening, because I felt, what is this, Swami? You looked at me, smiled and acknowledged, but you're not blessing. That is one, when I also turned recourse to this, keep looking at Swami's feet and hoping that Swami's heart melts. You're just hoping somewhere inside that Swami looks at you, sees how sad you are, and he sees that Papam, how dedicatedly he's looking at my feet only, and you know, somewhere gets melted, and you know, he blesses you. I was looking at his feet and now and then looking back at him, hoping that, you know, he has melted now. And other thing that happens is the bowl that you're holding in your hand, you start stretching out more and more. You just feel like that, you know, it's, you feel that the Lord doesn't know how desperate you are, and the more a show you make of it, the more info he gains about how desperate you are. All this is our foolishness, but we do it. We hold a letter, and if Swami doesn't take, we start to stretch it out. Then we hold it out even further. Then we get onto our knees and hold it further, because we think that we are making it easier for the Lord to take, not realizing that if he wants to take, nothing can stop him from taking it. If he doesn't want to take it, no force on the universe can make him take it. So I was stretching out this bowl of akshatas. Suddenly, after some fifth or sixth bhajan, suddenly Swami called during the second speed of a bhajan that was going on. I don't remember that bhajan. And at that time, you know, Swami put the akshata grains on my head and he spoke something. I couldn't hear anything. I understood the physical meaning of it's only in the depths of silence that you can hear the voice of God. If the noise being created is even a bhajan, even then you're not able to hear. It was bhajans, but I was not able to hear Swami. So I just told him, Swami, I'm not able to hear what you're telling. And Swami said, I will tell you later. I said, okay. That is precisely when the bhajan ended. And as that bhajan ended, Swami suddenly said, take namaskar, take namaskar, take namaskar. Twice he said that. It was so insistent. I was surprised, but I was happy anyway. So I just bent down to take pad namaskar. And as I was taking pad namaskar, you know, the next bhajan began, and the next bhajan was Sat. Yeah, I think I will not sing that bhajan, because as you realize what the next bhajan is, you will realize what a magical timing it was. And
it's being played as you speak.
Yes. Yes. So that was the bhajan. Satya Sai Padambhujam Bhajare Manasa Nirantaram. And I got overwhelmed with emotion, you know, as I fell at his feet. It was like the bhajan is saying, O mind, think of the lotus feet of the Lord. And exactly, I felt, Swami, what a birthday gift it is. And it was also a special thing for the singer, because I remember that singer Bharat, I think my classmate, he was singing it. Swami looked at him and said, saw the match, saw the timing. And he also said, yes, Swami, what a match it is. And it was so beautiful, so thrilling. And looking back at that incident, you know, I just feel, Swami, that is what I wish my manas does, nirantaram, that is Satya Sai Padambhujam Bhajore. I just pray that my mind thinks of your lotus feet and sings the glory and stays close to your lotus feet forever. But now, you know, it all sounds, but how now, Swami? Now you're not there, Swami. And it results in tears of sorrow also. That is when you realize that Padasevanam just does not mean the physical feet of the Lord. It must mean something higher, because God can't be so partial that he gives Padasevanam only for few people and not for others. So there is something much more to Padasevanam, and possibly we can delve into that after this little break. So dear listeners, those of us who feel that blessed are those few who got an opportunity to touch his feet, but we are not blessed because we can no longer get to touch his feet, I don't think this is the truth. There is such a beautiful message that Swami gives us through Padasevanam. It is a path that we can adopt even to this day, each and every one of us. And we shall see how we do that after this break.
సన్నిధిని చేరినాను సదానందవానిధిలో సనడోలలోగినాను సాయీశ్వరని పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినాను సదానంద వాణిజిలో సదడోలలు విన్నాను సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినాను హరే రామ హరే కృష్ణ హరే సాయి హరే హరే భజే సాయి శాంతిదాయి సత్య సాయి హరే 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 రామ హరే కృష్ణ హరే సాయి హరే హరే భజే సాయి శాంతిదాయి సత్య సాయి హరే హరే సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినా మనసులోన భక్తి సుధా మధురి మలే నింపినాను కనులలోన కాంతి ప్రభ కవిత జ్యోతి నిలిపినాను మనసులోన భక్తి సుధా మధురి మలే నింపినాను కనులలోన కాంతి ప్రభ కవిత జ్యోతి నిలిపినాను ఆరాధన పూర్వకముగ అనవరత ను ఆరాధన పూర్వకముగ అనవరతము కొలిచినాను తని వారసి తరించెద స్వామి నేడు ఆరాధన పూర్వకముగ అనవరతము కొలిచినాను తని వారసి తరించెద స్వామి నేడు సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని హృదయ పదములో నిరతము పదయుగమును నిలిపినాను భావవీధిలో సతతము సేవ చేయ తలచినాను ఆవేదన పొంగగ నను ఆదుకొనగ వేడినాను ఆవేదన పొంగగ నను ఆదుకొనగ వేడినాను పరమా కోరినాను నేను సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినాను త్రేతాయుగమందులయు సీతాపతి నీవు కదా ద్వాపరమ్ములో నవెలుగు గోపాలుడు నీవు కదా త్రేతాయుగమందులయు సీతాపతి నీవు కదా ద్వాపరం అవతరించిన సాయి విగడ ఈ గలి కాలమున అవతరించిన సాయి విగడ ప్రతివాస పరమ పురుష పరమాత్ముడ నీవే కదా ఈ కలి కాలమున అవతరించిన సాయి విగడ ప్రతివాస పరమ పురుష పరమాత్ముడ నీవే కదా సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినా ఆశ్రిత జన కోటి కల్ల అభయముసగుదాత నీవు నామ కీర్తనమున మురియు నారాయణ మూర్తి నీవు ఆశ్రిత జన కోటి కల్ల అభయముసగుదాత నీవు నామ కీర్తనమున మురియు నారాయణ మూర్తి నీవు లీలా మానుష దేహుడు బోళా శంకరుడ నీవు లీలా మానుష దేహుడు బోళా శంకరుడ నీవు త్రిలోకమరూపుడవు దీన బాంధవుడవు నీవు లీలా మానుష దేహుడు బోళా శంకరుడు నీవు త్రిమూర్తమరూపుడవు దీన బాంధవుడవు నీవు సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినాను సదానంద వాణిదిలో సదాడోలలు వినాను సాయీశ్వర నీ పదముల సన్నిధిని చేరినాను హరే రామ హరే కృష్ణ హరే సాయి హరే హరే భజే సాయి శాంతిదాయి సత్య
नित्य साई हरे 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 राम हरे कृष्ण हरे साई हरे हरे अजय साई शांति साई सत्य साई हरे हरे अजय साई शांति साई सत्य साई हरे हरे अजय साई शांति साई सत्य साई हरे हरे।
Welcome back, dear listeners. After that beautiful song, we'll continue with what we were talking about, Padasevanam. And as we said, Swami would say that the best example for this path is Mother Lakshmi. And going by that analogy, I think that place is already taken, right? I mean, whenever you have the picture of Lord Vishnu in your mind, at the feet is always Mother Lakshmi. So it's one place which is already taken. So is there any way we can get there? In fact, very beautifully Swami says in the discourse, we don't have the clip, but we have what Swami says here. You know, Swami would say, every one of you has, I know, the yearning to do Padaseva, that is massaging of my feet. And if I give the chance to all who are anxious to get it, what will happen to my feet? And what a rush there will be around me. In the very nature of things, all those who yearn cannot be satisfied. And should I clarify by saying that all those who yearn for this physical Padaseva cannot be satisfied? And clearly, you know, if I remember probably, I don't know whether this incident will fit into Padasevanam or it will fit into Archanam better, but nevertheless, let's narrate it. And Professor Nanjunde used to tell this incident, you know, where he always had this desire to do a little bit of ritualistic worship to Swami. You know, he wanted to offer, as they offer fruits and, you know, that betel leaf and things like that, and do puja to Swami, offer some flowers at Swami's feet. He always had that desire, one day I should do that to Swami, you know. So, and he used to have this opportunity to go up to Swami's room quite often when he was a teacher in the Brindavan College. He used to come all the way from Bangalore to take classes. So one day he had got this bag of fruits and all those offerings and all that. And he was comparatively a free day for Swami, not many VIPs and Swami had to attend to. So he requested Swami, "Swami, can I do this worship?" Swami said, "Yeah, do, chesko," Swami said. And he was very, very delighted and he did this entire thing, you know, spread out this thing and did this, I don't know what all he did. So he offered it and Swami also gave him all the time and Swami blessed him. At the end of it, Swami asked, Professor Nanjunde asked Swami, he said, "Swami, whatever I did now, does it qualify as devotion?" Okay, he said, "Swami, I've done with so much love and I've offered with so much devotion. Isn't this devotion?" or something like that he asked. Swami said, "No, definitely not." Okay, Swami said, "Definitely not. This is not devotion." And then Swami told him, "If you have this sort of devotion, it is a burden for you as well as it is for me." Swami said, this sort of a devotion, you know, ritualistically offering and wanting to worship God like this in this form, you know, doing Padasevanam as we have been saying. Swami said, it will be a burden for you as well as it will be a burden for me. But devotion should free you, right? Devotion should not put any limitations and bindings on you. And that is what is true devotion. And now if you see, you know, how can Padasevanam be limited to just holding those 2 feet of Swami? And of course, there was no doubt that it was so beautiful, and there is no doubt that there is so much of joy in doing that. And there is no doubt that even in seeking the chance, we have all purified ourselves so much. You know, because when we don't get the chance, we're all the time thinking that I'm not getting the chance, I'm not getting the chance, there's something wrong in me, and that has definitely led to a lot of purification. But still, that cannot be everything, right?
Absolutely, Prem. I will approach this from a slightly different angle. I remember on one occasion, not one occasion, but during one period in time, Swami stopped taking letters from students. For some God knows reason. Yeah, only He knows. He stopped taking letters from students. He would take letters only from devotees, not from the students. At that time, you know, I remember all the students who had some emergencies, you know, somebody is sick or there's a birth in the family, something which you feel is very important, not like all other normal letters.
Right.
We all would write normal letters. What is normal letter? We simply write a letter for the joy of giving that letter to Swami. So we simply take a piece of paper and write something. "Swami, please let me be at your feet. Let me do good in studies. let me respect my parents.
I mean, even as you're saying that, I remember, you know, there was a period in between when Swami used to take letters from the entire block.
Huh.
He would be sitting in the portico and, you know, there would be a huge line and one after the other they would go and give. And that was a time when Swami starts that. You don't know when Swami will start. One random day Swami will start taking like that. And you would see these schoolboys, they will grab the nearest notebook, tear a page. And I remember one fellow was sitting next to me, I think 8th standard fellow, really short and tiny fellow. Swami started taking like that. He just grabbed some graph book or something. I don't know what it was. And dear Swami, I love you, and his name. And that page was so tattered and, you know, it was not even torn properly. And folded it up, he rushed, joined the line. And I was sitting there and I was seeing this scene, you know. He went up to Swami. And Swami took the letter and Swami was looking at him till the time when he came back and sat here.
Hmm.
And Swami took the letter from him and all the while till he came and sat back here, Swami was going on staring at him. You know, that was the thing, you know, when you say make hay when sunshine. This is what it is, really.
Yeah, so... So going back to that, when Swami would do that, so therefore when this period when Swami was not taking letters from anyone, the actual letter writing people who have, you know, spent days thinking about what to write and they have written on a deep problem there in, you know, those are like what I will term in quotes as actual letters, rest are all like these time pass letters for the joy of giving letter to Swami. So the actual letter guys, they found themselves in some kind of a soup because, you know, now Swami is not taking anybody's letters. And on one occasion I remember a boy, a student even made courage to get up and tell, Swami, this is an emergency letter. Please, you know, take it. This is not like any other letter. And what Swami told him was very interesting. Swami said, if I take only yours, what will all others feel? You keep it. You post it to me, Swami told. Swami said, you post it to me because if I take only your letter, what will others feel? Now, look at Swami's sensitivity. He doesn't want to make someone feel exclusive at the cost of, you know, everybody. Because Swami has always been about inclusive. And I'm taking, as you said in that occasion, he takes a letter even from the guy who just writes, Dear Swami, love you, signs and goes and gives. Along with all others. At the same time, he's not taking anybody also. So when we have a Lord who believes so much in only inclusivity, in everything is inclusive. Never it has been about exclusivity. Can such a Lord ever make something exclusive like Padseva? Though it might look exclusive, we know our dear Swami. We know how inclusive He is. So it might be appearing exclusive, but it is not. If it is appearing exclusive, then we have something wrong in our drishti. As Swami would say, nothing is wrong in Srishti. Creation is perfect. It's all problem in the drishti. When drishti is having a problem, Srishti looks flawed. So therefore, if we are feeling that Pada Seva or Pada Puja or Pada Namaskar was something that Swami gave exclusively to some people, it is not true. It is not true. And if that is not true, when Swami is giving Namaskar, and as you said, we all pine and yearn for that. Because here also Swami is saying, all those who yearn cannot be satisfied. You know that all who yearn cannot be satisfied in the physical sense. And yet you do things that make that yearning grow in people when you give publicly Pada Namaskar. In Trai Vrindavan, we could clearly see the boy sitting right in front, pressing Swami's feet, and you wish, oh, how I wish I can get a chance to do it. Now, if feelings of jealousy or this pining are bad, Swami would never have done it because he is the epitome of love and karuna and compassion. Which means that even that pining that I want to press Swami's feet is good for us. Whether we actually get a chance to press his feet or not. The pining to press is great. It must definitely be redeeming in itself. I'm saying that based on the truth that Swami aroused that feeling in all of us. And if it was not good for us, he wouldn't have aroused it in us. The very fact that it is good for us, he aroused it in us. And therefore, I feel pining to do Pada Seva, pining to do Pada Puja, pining to do Pada Namaskar is as good as doing Pada Puja, Pada Namaskar or Pada Seva, if not better. So I feel that one of the ways in which we can fulfill opportunity of Pada Seva or Pada Namaskar or Pada Puja is by intensely pining for it, because that is what Swami has shown throughout his life. Here, though in his discourse he says that all those who yearn cannot be satisfied, he yet ensures that yearning comes, because yearning is equal to doing it in itself. and possibly greater also, because I feel a person who has yearned is able to appreciate better Padaseva without getting the opportunity to do Padaseva compared to a person who has got the opportunity to do Padaseva and does not have yearning.
I mean, obviously, because when we speak to these devotees who came in the 40s and 50s, they would say this, you know, because they spend the entire day with Swami. They're living in the same building and probably in the same courtyard they used to sleep. They're all the time with Swami, and at least 6 to 7 times in the day, Swami would turn to them and say, Pad Namaskar Tisko. And they would say, Swami, we took just some time back. You know, before lunch we took, or in the morning we took. Swami said, no, take. I mean, later you will feel bad for it. You know, those were times when they would say that, and in fact, some of them would say, you know, when you get into your teenage, and always that influence of West is so strong, people would feel hesitant to take Swami's Pad Namaskar. So, you know, we've taken once, you know, Swami, once for the trip is enough. You know, why every day? Why every session? You know, that sort of a thing. So that is why that yearning, and in fact, when you're saying that Swami cannot be so exclusive, Swami will definitely be so inclusive. Dr. Reddy narrates that beautiful incident, you know, when he was called for an interview, and I think there were other devotees in that group. There was one lady from overseas, I don't know which country, whether Latin America or somewhere in Europe, where Swami, you know, very complainingly told her, very beautiful scene, he was saying that Swami was looking at her and Swami was reprimanding her, why do you hug my feet so tight? My knees are aching. You know, because she had this habit of having a sofa for Swami in her altar, and she would imagine Swami sitting there, and she would imagine she is hugging Swami's feet and praying and crying and, you know, conversing with Swami. Swami said, don't hug my feet so much, my knees are paining.
Wow.
You know, and exactly, why should we think that we don't have the opportunity to save up for that feet now? Because it was always reaching his feet. You know, you could be sitting in some distant corner in the world and offering, and it was definitely reaching Swami. Why should we think that we can't do that now?
And what matters if we want to do that now is that pining. I think I have narrated this incident so many times. I've heard it being narrated many times. I've read it so many times. But I would wish to narrate it again because it's such a powerful incident. It's from the Satya Sai Speaks Part 1. It's the story of one clerk from the erstwhile Mysore Secretariat. His name is Krishnamurti. And this is the time when Swami was in his teens. And as you stated, the crowd around Swami those days was very sparse. It was about 20-30 people. And at that point in time, this teenager Krishnamurti, he suddenly got a kind of an awakening from within. He felt that, you know, this is not the frame that I am seeing. This Satya Sai Baba is something much beyond. And so he went to Swami, just held his hand and said, show me your true form, show me your true form, show me your true form. You know, he kept pestering, and it seemed little out of place that somebody is catching a teenager and saying, show me your true form, this is not your form. So Swami somehow escaped from his clutches. And it is said that Swami materialized a photograph of Shirdi Baba for him and said, whatever you want, you ask here. Okay, and left him and left that house. It was the house of some host in Bangalore. And Swami left, and this Krishnamurti sat all the while with that picture of Shirdi Baba. And when Swami returned, it was as if Krishnamurti had received another electric shock or a jolt, because he folded that photograph of Shirdi Baba, kept it aside, closed his eyes, and came out saying, where are those feet? You know, I want to touch the feet of Swami. And so insistent was he in this, he's not ready to open his eyes. Just imagine. He's not ready to open his eyes to search for the feet of the Lord. He's telling, when I open my eyes, the first thing I see must be Swami's feet. So people thought, okay, fine. You know, he has got into some kind of a devotional frenzy. No big deal. Because as you said, those were days when Swami would say, come take Namaskar Rek 2 times, and they would say, how many times, Swami? But guess what? The Swami who would call people and tell take Namaskar is now creating a kind of a demand, you know. Because he's telling, no, I don't want to come near Krishnamurti, you take him away. He forces the devotees to take away Krishnamurti and not get him near his presence. And Krishnamurti is literally mad. He's taken to his home, but he's saying, no, I want Swami, I want Swami, I want Swami. And guess what? Even at home, he's not opening his eyes. And Kasturi Garu records in that book, it's amazing when you read it, that he sneaked out of the house, hired a horse cart, and made his way to where Swami was, and he did all this without opening his eyes, smelling his way through the way a dog would do. And even when he landed at the place of the host, he was smelling and moving from windows. He was able to smell Swami out, but he's not opening his eyes because he says, when I open my eyes, the first thing I want to see is Swami's feet. Once again, Swami dismisses him. He's sent back home. So much is his obsession with Swami's feet that he doesn't even take drink or food. So much. He says, I'll not do it till I see Swami's feet. They admit him in an hospital. And then, you know, they think that, let's go and tell Swami here. It has got little serious. They come to Swami and tell Swami, this is serious. You know, they have admitted him in the hospital. What Swami does is beautiful. Swami washes his feet and gives those water washings as Tirtham and says, and also gives Vibhuti. And he says, give this to him, he'll be fine. That's precisely what happened. They give that to Krishnamurti and he's back to his entire strength. And he goes back home. But when he goes back home, he says, nah, let's start bhajans. Let's start bhajans. But though he's back to his strength, though he's back to doing bhajans, he still not opened his eyes. And Swami tells the devotees there that just like a bulb is not ready to receive a high voltage, Krishnamurti is not yet ready. Because it will be a high voltage that he receives. So the devotees are not able to make out this cryptic language that Swami is speaking in. But during the bhajans, he is thinking of Swami. And it is said, it is recorded that finally he opens his eyes, looks at the picture of Bhagwan, again closes his eyes, and with a smile on his face, he is redeemed forever. And you know what, Prem? All this happens without him having actually seen the feet only. When I read this, the first thing that hit me like a ton of bricks was, Arvind, you have touched Swami's feet so many times. What the hell has happened to you? Nothing has happened. You're still the same, very much alive, nothing. You have not experienced the throes of ecstasy or nothing has happened. You're still the same. And that Krishnamurti, who couldn't even see Swami's feet. And that too at what time? At a point of time in history when people would get 10-20 Padnamskars on an average per day. In such a period in time, he didn't get to see even the Lord's feet once. And yet he got the ultimate gift. You know, when I read this, it just stamped into my heart that actual touching of the feet is not as important as pining to touch the feet, because pining to touch the feet builds up such a kind of, you know, Swami says, your pining is the negative. Swami has said in a discourse, and my grace is the positive. Only when there is a negative can there be a current, because the positive is always there. If you don't build up that thing, there will be no flow of current. And once the current flows, it's just a moment. One moment is enough to redeem. So without the negative, it's like touching a live electric wire with a dead rubber piece and then saying that I'm not receiving any electrifying experience. Just remain grounded and build up that potential. One touch is enough. You will receive that jolt just like Krishnamurti received. And that's why I feel the best way to do Padasevanam is to pine for it. That pining. Do we have that kind of pining? We think we have that pining, but I don't think we have that kind of pining for the Lord's feet.
And absolutely. I think it's, I mean, in this context we're talking about pining, but it is that intention, you know, it finally comes to that. Probably when we speak of next week, that is the angle of Padasevanam we'll take, because till now we were thinking of why I wish to do Padasevanam, why I wish to touch the feet of the Lord. And what I believe is Padasevanam, that's the whole concept. But I think next week, as I said, when we come to that, we will see what Swami says is my Padasevanam. You know, what is a Padasevanam I want? You know, you are talking about the Padasevanam you want. What is a Padasevanam I want? We will leave that to next week, because it's a completely different viewpoint which we all have to lead to. Coming back to this, you know, even as you're narrating about Krishnamurti wanting to touch Swami's feet, believing that that is the greatest gift that he can get. You know, there was a person who came with a completely different intention. Of course, I don't know the reference for this. I've not read it in any book. It's pure hearsay. So the details might be a little wavery. Apparently, there was one person who came and he was from the Himalayas. And in Himalayas, I think a lot of people do penance for different reasons. Some really want to just pick up some powers on the way. And this person, he had a different idea altogether. You know, there was one particular siddhi that you can develop where if you touch a person's feet or if you touch a person, you can draw strength from that person. Okay? So
that is what usually happens when you touch anybody's feet, right?
That is with a good intention. You know, you get good vibrations, but you can actually draw the the strength which that person has.
Oh, suck
from
it
that
out.
Person, right? Like something like what Wali had, that boon. You know, anybody comes in front of you, you can get half that person's strength. So this person had actually got that siddhi, and he was, you know, this person's thinking was, let me go to the most accomplished, you know, sannyasi or sage in the country. And if I go and touch his feet, I will draw all his energy. You know, I don't have to spend all the years.
Shortcut, yes.
Right? You know, get this one particular siddhi and then draw the other energies from, you know, whichever sannyasi is around. So apparently he chose that Swami is the one who seems to be doing the maximum number of miracles. So let me come to Satyasai Baba and touch his feet and draw all the energy I want from him. Okay, and this person was there. He came to the darshan and then he also found that it's so easy to touch Swami's feet. You know, you just have to sit in the front row and Swami would walk past you and you can touch Swami's feet. And he was sitting there and Swami comes right in the front row. And you know, when somebody comes like this, Swami would play it up so beautifully that he'll get the first row, he'll be sitting right in front. And Swami will come and stand right in front of that person. And that's exactly how it happened, you know. Swami comes for darshan. Swami stands right in front of him and Swami speaks to somebody who is behind him. So he has all the opportunity to take Padmanamaskar or touch Swami's feet to his heart's content. Okay, and Swami standing there for a good 1.5-2 minutes, and then Swami goes away. And after that, they see that this old man who's sitting there, and of course he's flowing beard and all that, he starts sobbing like a child, sitting there, and everybody's wondering what happened. So they turn to him and ask, "What happened? You know, why are you crying? Did what transpired between you? What was the spiritual experience that you had?" And then that is when this person tells this whole story. You know, this is why I came and this was the intention with which I came and I wanted to touch Swami's feet. So then they said, "Then did you touch Swami's feet? What happened?" He said, "No, for one full minute Swami is standing in front of me and I was searching for Swami's feet and I couldn't touch it."
Whoa.
He's saying he's not able to find Swami's feet in front of him.
Under the robe.
Right. You know, of course, it's a completely different thing that even if he had touched Swami's feet, he would have at best got Swami's purity. Probably he did not deserve it with the intention with which he came. But you know, what an experience it is sitting there and he's saying that I couldn't touch Swami's feet. You know, talking of Krishnamurti, Swami probably wanted that yearning to swell so much so that he gets the ultimate for that little bit of yearning which he had. But here was this person who came with a completely different intention and even he did not get that Padmanamaskar, which is
that's
easy to
get. Very important point, Prem, because I remember again reading it in a discourse. I'm sorry, dear listeners, I'm not remembering which discourse, nor do I have the clip. But very clearly I remember reading this. I think it was one of the Paduka Puja discourses. You know, Swami permitted Paduka Puja. See, that is the compassion of the Lord, because man, you know, our mind is such that it always looks to something to hold on to. See, even now, Swami has given us the truth. He did the namaskar to all of us, telling that I am in all of your hearts. That's why even this physical frame which you consider as God, I am bowing with that frame to all of you. In spite of that, no, we want an idol. We want to run behind somebody who apparently sees Swami. And that is the reason why all these Mudanhalli business and all has flourished. Because of people's need to hold on to something physical and earthly. You know, instead of holding on to the Lord. But the Lord understands that, and in His kindness, I think in His compassion, He permitted this Paduka Puja. See, what is interesting is, Prem, the Lord, like a parent, bends down to our level to help us. He'll crawl along with, like the father or mother crawls along with the baby, he'll crawl along. But if the baby refuses to stand up and walk, then nothing doing. He stands up and says, "You get up and walk." Because, you know, you're not meant to crawl all your life. You're learning, it's okay. So too I feel, there was a time when Swami said, "Okay, take Padmanamaskar, yes." But don't we know that in the same Swami in the year 2002 publicly announced that I'm stopping Padmanamaskar? Why? If that is so redeeming, why stop it? The same Swami who started Paduka Puja, he only stopped it later on. But, so that is the thing, he gives us an opportunity to evolve and grow higher in understanding what Paduka Puja means. He says, so if you are not able to touch my feet, all thousand of you come, there are Padukas. And then you start telling, no, the silver Paduka, this golden Paduka, golden Paduka is more powerful than silver. Or when you get into all these by lanes of distractions, you are forgetting the main point and Swami says, stop it. You know, this is not the important thing. So, Yeah, that is, that, I feel that was Swami's compassion that he gave Paduka Puja as a substitute for Pada Puja, because now you need not come restricted to only those 2 feet of Swami which you find in the interview room. You can be at your home and you can do Pada Puja because, yeah, but you need something to hold on to, yeah, take these Padukas. That was Bhagwan's love. But even during that, you know, in a discourse, Swami clearly mentions, he says, when you do Paduka Puja, don't do it with any worldly intention. Because then it will not help at all. It will defeat the entire purpose of Paduka Puja. Swami has clearly mentioned, when you do it, your only intention should be to grow closer to the Lord. To go closer to the Lord, to grow closer to the Lord. So, when that is so clearly stated by Bhagwan, naturally when a person comes with such intentions, it is not only worldly, it is also negative worldly. In the sense, it's not even like let it benefit. Even in a worldly sense, it's not positive. It's such a greedy, selfish, kind of cruel desire. Naturally, even if you touch the feet, it will not be equal to doing Pada Puja. And therefore, we go back to what we said is the first, what we feel is the first method of Pada Puja, which is pining. Because pining is everything. I'm reminded of that Chinnakatha, Prem. I'm sure you also remember. About how pining for the Lord gets you the Lord, actually.
Right. I mean, I think you're referring to the Socrates story, right? It's actually the story of
Socrates. Swami has narrated this without naming Socrates.
Right. In a way, he comes and says, how do I become as wise as you? How do I get the ultimate knowledge like how you've got it?
Mm.
And apparently he comes to Socrates when Socrates has gone to the river for his bath.
Mm.
So that's when Socrates says, why don't you join me for the bath? So they go into the water and Socrates catches hold of this, you know, young boy's head and puts it under the water with all his force, you know, holds him down. And a good 3 minutes or 4 minutes and this man's gasping for his breath and I think finally he kind of pushes himself. And, you know, I think all reverence goes at that time. Till then, probably he wouldn't be using his force against Socrates and pushes him and he starts yelling at Socrates. He says, are you a madman? You're trying to kill me. So then Socrates very calmly asks, you know, when you were underwater, what were you thinking about? What did you want? You know, what did you want the most? He said, of course, air. You know, I desperately was wanting to breathe. So then Socrates says, you know, the day when you start wanting knowledge like the way you wanted air when you were underwater, that day you really deserve that knowledge and you will get it. And Swami would say, right, you know, that is that pining which you should have for God.
Extrapolating that's what, the day we really pine for Swami the way we pine for air. I mean, I feel we all say we want Swami, we love Swami, we can't live without Swami, but is that the truth? Do I pine for Swami the way I pine for air when I'm underwater? Do I feel that if I don't get Swami, I'm dead, I'm gone, I can't? Because you see, as you said, in the beginning, it might be whatever. Possibly the disciple had, not the disciple, the man had respect for Socrates, so he didn't use all his force against a great master. That might be a reason. It might also be, you know, there's something called a gag reflex that kicks in when you're underwater. The gag reflex is, you automatically, from inside, you gag yourself so that you don't take in water.
Right.
And when that gag reflex kicks in, you know that you have just got a few moments to survive. If you don't find air, then you're gone. And that makes such a hell of a difference. People, after having got the gag reflex, have found tremendous strength to kick out and come out and surface to take in that gasp, you know. They come and take in that. So that kicks in. That is automatically built in so beautifully that when you know that your death is coming, you somehow unlock great reserves of strength which are within. So though you're constantly, as you're inside water, you're constantly losing strength, when it comes to that point of death, you suddenly get one surge of strength. And if that doesn't work, of course you die. But if most often than not it works, because that is a great surge of strength. And it shows that when we really pine for the Lord and feel that without the Lord we are going to die, just before that moment of death comes, there will be a surge that comes within that automatically makes us get God, just as the way that disciple found air. It's just that we lack in that pining and we think that we are pining. We think that we want Swami more than anything else in the world, but the moment we lose a little money, our entire focus is back to money. And you know, we look at God after we get the money. We think that we love the Lord more than anything in the world, but the moment we lose a loved one, somebody is sick, or possibly we have a breakup with someone whom we love or whatever, we suddenly feel that this is more important. I wish this person comes back into my life, comes back from death. I wish he is saved or she is saved. Swami takes the back seat. Swami is the front seat as long as everything is fine. The moment something goes wrong, that becomes a priority over Swami. So, I feel when we are not able to touch and feel His feet, it's only because we are not pining enough for it. So, one way out of the possible three ways that we shall discuss in our satsang, one way that we have discussed today is possibly to pine and thirst for that opportunity to do Pada Seva, to touch His feet. And I feel that pining in itself will reward us at the perfect time.
It reminds me of what I heard in, you know, one of these reality shows where you have reality shows for music uh-huh. talent search kind of thing. No? So there was this panel of three judges and they would ask the contestants, you know, so tell about yourself and all that. And I think invariably every other person was saying that, you know, music is my passion and all that. So at one point, one of the judges lost it. He said, do you even have any idea what you mean when you say that music is my passion? You know, don't just say that you like music. Liking music is one thing, loving music is one thing, and saying that music is my passion is a completely different thing. You are using music right now as a gateway to your glory. You know, that's not passion. When you say music is my passion, music is your everything. It's a completely different thing. I think that's what it is. When you say that I want Swami, you know, I want Swami passionately, I'm pining for Swami, it's a completely different thing. It's not using Swami for your happiness, using Swami to achieve, you know, what, you know, welfare for people, yourself, for people around you, or glory for yourself. It's nothing like that. It's, I want Swami more than anything else in life. It's a completely different ballgame when you say that I passionately pine for Swami.
And you know, having heard that, I feel I've got miles to go before I sleep
all
in
of
the
us,
sense.
I think all yes, of us.
Miles to go in our pining for Swami. We are at a stage possibly where we like Swami, like the way I like ice cream, I like gobi manchurian, I like masala dosa, I like Swami also. Which means if he's there, it's good, it's fun, I have joy. But do I feel he's like my vital air, that without him, I no longer exist? I think that is what we shall, that shall be our life endeavor, and we pray to Swami offering this satsang at His lotus feet, that Swami, even as we offer this satsang at Your lotus feet, may that pining in us for attaining Your feet be intense, may it keep growing every moment of our life, because nothing else in life is worthwhile than attaining Your lotus feet. With that, dear listeners, we bring to close the first part of our satsang on Pada Sevanam. The second part we shall resume and conclude in the next week. So right now we will leave you with a song, the other side of which, as always, will be the segment Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
పాదములను నందిన వారము నీరజాక్ష బాబా సన్నిధి చేరికి శాంతిను చందుము సత్య సాయి బాబా సత్య సాయి బాబా మించిన పెట్టు గంధములు పుట్టిక పట్టితి బాబా లెక్కకు మించిన పెట్టు గంధములు పుట్టిక పట్టితి బాబా ఒక్కటైన పరమాత్మను పొందడి దిక్కు చూపదో బాబా ఒక్కటైన పరమాత్మను పొందడి దిక్కు చూపదో బాబా నీ పాదములను నమ్మిన వారము నీరజాక్ష బాబా సన్నిధి చేతి శ
శాంతి వసంగు సత్య సాయి బాబా సత్య సాయి బాబా. విముక్తి మందిరపు పసిని కలపులో బాబా పదములు కావ విముక్తి మందిరపు పసిని కలపులో బాబా భక్తి సూత్రమున నన్ను చేరుకొని భద్రత నసదుము బాబా భక్తి సూత్రమున నన్ను చేరుకొని భద్రత నసదుము బాబా నీ పాదములను నమ్మిన వారము నీరజాక్ష బాబా చేరికి శాంతిను సంగుము సత్య సాయి బాబా సత్య సాయి బాబా. జ్ఞానముద్రలో దర్శనము సగుము దాస పోషకావా జ్ఞానముద్రలో దర్శనము సగుము దాస పోషకావా నిత్య సత్యముకు జ్ఞాన జ్యోతిపై వెలుగుమయ్య బాబా నిత్య సత్యముకు జ్ఞాన జ్యోతిపై వెలుగుమయ్య బాబా నీ పాదములను నమ్మిన వారము నీరజాక్ష బాబా సన్నిధి చేరికి శాంతి వసంగుము సత్య సాయి బాబా సత్య సాయి బాబా.